Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
Cool, let's jam. So awesome to have you here. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? I'm curious. And I always like to hear the answer to this question because it's fascinating to me. If somebody were to ask you who you are at a bar, at a coffee shop, whatever, what would you tell them the answer to that is?
Depends on if my husband's with me or not.
That's a first. That's funny. All right. Elaborate.
He's in politics. He's in politics. So everybody's like, oh, you're in politics. I want to talk to you about what's going on in the world. And I'm always like, oh.
Uh-huh. So let's say your husband's not with you then. What would you say that who you are?
it depends on the audience, but I'd probably say I'm an author.
Okay. Just leave it at that. So I guess the answer would be the same if somebody asked you what you did for a living, right?
If someone asked me what I did for a living, I'd say marketing. But you know, people are like, they get bored by that. They're like, oh, good for you. Or my favorite is, oh, I was in sales and marketing before I had kids 20 years ago. And I'm like, oh, good for you.
Oh, wow. good for you. You want a cookie?
Right.
Oh, that's funny. So what part of marketing do you specialize in? Is it because you're also an author. So is it you're a copywriter or what branch do you like?
No, communications, PR. So I grew up in the PR firm world and yeah. I actually created the PESOL model, which we just relaunched this morning. And it has sort of changed the communications industry, but what's the word I want? Like in the industry, you know, outside of the industry, people are like, oh, well, that's nice. That's
they
nice.
Smile and nod. And inside,
yeah.
What
yeah,
the hell
yeah,
did
yeah,
you
yeah.
just say?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I know exactly what
so,
you
yeah,
mean.
Yeah. So usually I just say I run a PR firm.
Okay. Perfect. I love it because that's fascinating to me. PR especially is, I love it. One of the ways I look at PR is using it to, I don't know if you define this as PR, but it's got the same mindset behind PR. One of the ways that I like to get in contact with people with big followings, for example, is I'll send them something that is, it's like a mini PR stunt. You can think of it as where it's, I send them something that's, it makes them wonder who the hell is this person. Like, for example, I sent my mentor to get my mentor like 4 or 5 years ago. I sent him an Apple computer box. So he's like, holy shit, there's a computer. Somebody sent me a computer. He opens it up and I put weights in it and everything. So it felt like it was actually like a, right. Then it opened it up and then there's a letter inside. And then it said on the front of it, more value than 1,000 MacBooks. And so I wanted to make it so that he didn't open
That's
it
awesome.
Up and associate disappointment with the letter.
Yep.
And so
yep.
I still had to continue the theme there. But I look at that as a mini PR stunt because it's the same.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
Smaller scale, right? So it's interesting. What got you into PR? It's a fascinating career choice.
Nobody ever asked that question. I was going to go to law school and my mom got sick and needed a caretaker. And so I graduated from college and had about a year and a half where I was taking care of her and I needed a job. And a girlfriend of mine said, hey, I just interviewed for this job at a PR firm and it's not for me, but I think you would be really good at it. You should interview. And I was like, I didn't even know what PR was. I was like, okay, well, I need a job. So I interviewed for the job and I got it. And needless to say, I never went to law school. I just kept going.
What did you love about it when you got started there?
I don't know. I think I just loved that it came really naturally. And it was something that I discovered I had a passion for. You know, at the time, it wasn't detailed this way, but a lot of what we do is writing, and that's my first love is writing. So being able to do that and get paid to do it without having to be a journalist that, you know, is scraping by was pretty compelling.
Fair enough. Yeah, damn right. Let's look at it from an entrepreneur's viewpoint. Let's say a business less than 10 employees, maybe 500K a year or less in revenue. How do you look at, and we can kind of walk through the process step by step. If you were consulting for an individual, or if you yourself had a startup like this, and you were looking at the PR. We can look at it like this. Let's say that I was you for a day and you're teaching me how to run PR for your company. So how would I start if I were you for the day? Where would I begin when it comes to marketing or running the PR, beginning it so that I can get people start to talk about me? Where do we begin here?
So if we're starting with a new client, or it's somebody like you've described, the way I would do it is I would talk about the PESO model. So the PESO model is paid, earned, shared, and owned media. And when you use all four of those media types together, you can build a really cohesive communications program that helps you build experience. It helps you build authority and trust via your experience and expertise, which is also important to Google. So yeah, so it helps too. But one of the things that, so I would say, even though the PESO model starts with paid media, you never actually start with paid. You always start with owned. And so one of the things you would start with is developing your own content. It might be a podcast, it might be a YouTube series, it might be live streaming on LinkedIn, it might be a blog, depending on, whatever you're most comfortable with and you'll actually do. So if I said to you, I'd really like you to start a podcast, and you're like, I hate the sound of my voice, that's never going to happen. So we always say, let's start with content that you're comfortable creating. And then you'll use shared media to distribute it and to build community. You'll use earned media, which is journalists and influencers, to get attention and to gain credibility, and then paid media to boost it and reach new audiences.
And what was the fourth one? Shared, earned, paid, and you named four, I think, right?
Owned.
And owned. Okay, interesting. So I guess the goal of the first three is to create it into owned at the end of the day, right? Okay, interesting. All right, so let's go into the shared a little bit. How do you look at getting traffic to your content? So we can kind of walk through the three until we get to the owned section. I think that's a good place to take this. So how do we'll start with the shared. Where do we begin in terms of, let's say we've got the content and we want to start getting more eyeballs on it. What do we do in terms of tapping into the shared one?
The way I would answer that is it depends, which is a crappy answer, but it depends on, what the business is. So if the business is consumer, it's going to be different than B2B. But typically what you do is you'll find the social media network that makes most sense for your business. So if you're B2B, I highly recommend LinkedIn, and I highly recommend it from the perspective of using the Creator Studio, posting on your business and your personal pages, and really just using LinkedIn to its fullest extent. If you're a consumer business, it might make more sense to be on Instagram or TikTok or even Twitter, which I know we're not supposed to call Twitter anymore, but so it depends. But really finding where your prospective customers are hanging out, and then spend the time there.
Okay, so let's tap into the influencers a little bit, because they've already accumulated. So let's say we've got the platform. We know that if they're business owners, LinkedIn. If you're looking for moms looking to lose weight, maybe it's Pinterest or TikTok. Who knows?
Right. Yep.
Right. And so you, and then within each of these platforms, there are influencers who have already collected together all of the target audience in one spot, where if you tapped into that somehow, you'd be able to, like, an instant windfall overnight for both of you, ideally. Right. And so you can find these synergies, these relationships that you can tap into. How do you look at the influencer realm if you were to go about getting traffic or wanting to get promoted by them? You can pay them, or you can have some sort of relationship building with them. Let's go with the
Right.
latter. Let's assume that we don't want to pay them. We want to build a relationship and a synergistic opportunity where they promote you and both benefit, and their audience benefits too. So how do you look at that? Where do we start in terms of tapping into other people's audiences?
Again, it depends.
Okay. So actually, let's generalize it, because regardless if it's B2B or whatever you're trying to sell, we can assume that we know the person who has the audience. So we can generalize it
Sure.
like that. So it doesn't depend as much, right? We got the people. How do we get in contact with them?
Yeah, I think it depends on, not depends. I think it's related to whether or not they have a large following. So if they're a micro influencer versus a celebrity, right? So with the celebrities, you're probably going to have to pay. So let's focus on micro and mac and like smaller influencers. And really, that's about relationships. It's not any different than you would use what you would do with a journalist. So if you wanted to get into TechCrunch, or you wanted to be in the Wall Street Journal, or you wanted to be in New York Times, you would develop a relationship with the journalist who writes about your business or your industry. And it's the same thing. You're going to develop a relationship with them. And in some cases, they might want, you know, a revenue share. They might want a free product. They might want, like, almost 10 years ago, they would have done that for what I would say free, but almost no one will do it for free anymore. But you can find really creative ways to do it without having to exchange cash. You know, like for me, I'm an influencer in the PR industry, and I like to test software out. So if you give me access to your software, I'm going to test it out. I'm going to use it in our business and see what works and what doesn't. And I'm going to be really honest about it, right? Like this, I really like this aspect, but this aspect could be, and then together you can decide, is that as an influencer, is that, and the business can decide, is that something that they want me to communicate or not? And sometimes they say, you know, let us go fix those things you don't like, and we can have another conversation in 6 months. And sometimes they say, yeah, let's figure out a way to do this. So you can definitely find ways to do it without cash changing hands, but there's probably going to be a little bit of quid pro quo in some essence.
Yeah, right. And then the quid pro quo could even just be as simple as something benefiting their existing product
or absolutely
whatever yep. they sell. So for example, yep. if you sell a course on how to sell on Facebook ads, and you have a, let's say you're going to approach people who sell funnel software or website building opportunities or agencies that do that, whatever it might be, the two go hand in hand together. The one improves the other. And so it creates this bond where the two are greater than having to buy them separately. And then you can approach the list owner and say, hey, look, if your audience is to find this information on their own, they're risking getting ripped off. And so I've got something that's a genuine solution. All these case studies prove that. And it proves your service. It makes it so that your people that are buying from you are more valuable to you because they're making more money with the increased result. And I like your bracelets, by the way. It just I got distracted. That's awesome.
All my Taylor Swift bracelets.
Yeah, there you go. So you have an audience within the PR space. So if somebody were to approach you, what are some things that they could, and we can generalize this to anybody with a list. So red flags to avoid, something that you would catch your attention as apart from trying out somebody's software. What do you look for if somebody reaches out to you and wants to start building?
Oh, red flags is a really good question. So as a woman, I always look for misogyny and gaslighting, which is becomes really clear in a way that a male business leader will work with us. So that's one of the first red flags we look for is this company and are its leaders up to par? There's one vendor in the PR industry who we will not work with because they don't have a single woman on their executive team. And the PR industry is 75% women. So that's a big red flag for us.
Interesting.
So we look at that. We look at that kind of stuff first. And then we look to see, you know, are there already reviews about the product? We have a pretty big community full of PR professionals. So we'll do a search through the community to see if people have talked about the product or the service, to see what they're saying, because it's sort of behind the wall, you know, that the brand can't necessarily see. So we do that. And then we'll look to see, you know, are there things that they're saying in their own marketing that looks alarming, or are they bashing competitors or things like that? So we look sort of at those three levels. And then if there aren't any red flags, or there's only one or two that we're kind of just want to look to get through, then we'll look at doing a relationship with them in some fashion.
So what about the tactical outreach itself? Let's say nobody knows you. I mean, let's say I'm reaching out to you, you don't know me. What's an outreach example that would be able to kick off the relationship without this sort of quid pro quo initially? Because you don't want to look at it from a transactional
point.
You want to look at it from building a relationship, ongoing relationship that's mutually beneficial. So let's say you were reaching out to a journalist or somebody with a list that you have, you want to get access to their audience. How do you kick off that relationship? What do you send them?
Well, I have a really good example.
Please.
You did that. We didn't know each other. And you just sent me a really you sent me a really good email, and I could tell it was, I could tell you had done your research, and it wasn't, you know, I get a lot of pitches, and it's always AI generated or it's a robot generated by a robot. And I'm like, all you did was look at our homepage and pull some copy off of there. So I think what you did really well is you did your research. You said, hey, this sounds interesting. I really like this, the passion and the path that you've taken, and I think it will benefit. And like, I didn't know you. And so I did some research on my end to see, okay, who is this guy and what does he have? And, you know, and then my team and I had a conversation, and I said, yeah, like, let's pursue this. So I think just a well-researched personal email is one way to do it. Another way to do it is if the person creates is a big content creator, comment on and share their content. You know, I had one person who wanted me to be on their podcast. I had never heard of him before, but apparently I was on his like must have list, and he just kept commenting on my LinkedIn content. And I, at one point I was like, who is this guy? And so I just did some research. And then about 2 months later, he pitched me to be on his podcast, but because he had been commenting and sharing, I already knew who he was. So that's a really good way to do it too, especially if it's somebody who is, you know, if it's a journalist at a big publication, if it's a big time influencer in your industry, though, that's a really good way to get someone's attention.
I love that. And yeah, so that's a long-term approach, really. You're talking about commenting and liking posts months ahead of time, and then they can ask once you know the name. And so and that's cool, because you've associated that individual associated himself or themselves with value, as opposed to just an ask up front, right? And so they've built some reciprocity, even if it's unconscious. You've got some sort of yearning to give back because he's given to you. And you know, I don't mean that in a transactional sense. It's just natural. We want to give back to people who have helped us.
Right. Absolutely.
So,
yes.
Yeah, something to tap into there for sure. I love it. So let's get into. I want to get into media, because I feel like this is a neglected asset with a lot of online businesses. Let's say you want to approach, because let's say you're selling financial advice and the Wall Street Journal has the perfect target audience for you. And if you got an article written with maybe even a call to action to your book or whatever in it, it could change everything, a single article. How do you go about getting in contact with a journalist and building that relationship then? Is it similar? Do you send grabbers in the mail? What are some examples in terms of what's worked for you?
The first thing I will say is it's getting extraordinarily challenging to get in front of a journalist for a couple of reasons. One, because the media continues to consolidate and journalists continue to be laid off. There were like close to 1,000 journalists laid off in January between the LA Times and Sports Illustrated and some other publications. So media continues to get smaller and smaller. And what happens then is that the journalists who are left are covering beats that they don't know anything about. They're doing it because there's no one else to do it. And their real love might be finance, but they're also covering toothpaste and cupcakes, right? Like so their time is scattered. So one of the best ways to do it, first off, is some of them are still on Twitter, X. And a lot of them are moving over to Reddit to get story ideas. So find, do searches in both places. So first of all, figure out who the journalist is by reading the paper, right? That's the first thing. And then search for that person on Reddit and on Twitter to see if they're in either place and if they're, you know, pretty active. So you can engage with them in both of those places. So that's number one. Number two, again, comment on and share their content, because they're paying attention to that. They are more than an influencer. They are paid based on how many views their articles get and how much it's shared on social. So their feet are held to the fire pretty hard on that one. So if you can help promote their content, that helps. And a lot of them are freelancers. So they might have their own businesses. So if you discover that they have their own business, then it might be an easy way for you to share that content that they're creating, because a lot of them will have their own freelance business that they're creating blog content, or they maybe have a blog or a podcast or something like that. So I would say those three things: commenting on and sharing, Reddit and Twitter, and then see if they have their own business that you can help promote.
That's awesome. You know, what comes to mind when you say that is being able to tap into what their interest is. So if they're writing about cupcakes, but they want to write about finance, being able to say, hey, look, I know that you like writing about finance. And I saw this article that you write about cupcakes. Why don't we talk about some finance together? And I've got this.
Yes.
And instead of really going for the ask right away, what comes to mind is saying, especially if they've got their own business, if they're a freelancer and they've got a self-interest that they want to be able to promote, but they can't be plugging their own stuff all the time, you can give them an opportunity to be able to sell their own services without a direct
absolutely
about theirs, right?
Yeah,
so you can say,
absolutely.
Hey, I've got this topic for you, and I think at the end it would plug your because it fits directly in with your business. Look at what's beneficial, what they want, and so the question becomes, how do you know what's on their mind? Yes, through research, but how do you know what's on their mind to tap into, so that way you can know that this person likes writing about finance if their writing is convoluted and they're writing about cupcakes, so it's hard to identify from somebody from you know, just observing objectively. So how do you know what to leverage there?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, and it's hard. Like I said, you know, it's becoming even more challenging because of all of this. But just paying attention, like, you can set up an alert to have, you know, anytime the person publishes something, to have it come to you so that you can see what they're publishing. And start to see the trends, because there will be trends, right? There may be some one-off and things like this, but you'll start to notice some trends, and then you can tap into that. But I like setting up alerts for people that I want to build relationships with, because it helps me figure out what those trends are, and then I can sort of pinpoint into them.
Interesting. Yeah, see, I love that. What about using AI? Because we mentioned not using AI unethically, right? But if you can use it to facilitate a relationship, let's say giving AI the name and in all of the articles they've ever written, and say, find patterns with what they were really passionate
absolutely
about. Absolutely. Yeah. And then be able to pull that out and then leverage that with your outreach.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's a cool idea. Yeah. I like it.
Great idea.
What about AI in your company? How are you using AI, if at all?
I freaking love it.
Right. Okay. Perfect. So how are you using it right now? And how can we use it to improve our businesses?
So there's a couple of things. Number one, from a content perspective, it gives such a good first draft. So what I have found is the better we get internally at prompting it, the better we get, the better the first draft is. Yeah. It's just a first draft. It's not something that you would publish. And like I always say to my team, which is, the content doesn't have a soul when it comes from AI. So you're going to give it the soul. You're going to put the storytelling in there. You're going to share your experience. You're going to share your expertise. You're going to add that in there. But it's a great place to start, because it's so much easier to add to a first draft than it is to create from scratch. So much easier. I was on a podcast with a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned Opus AI. So they are taking their podcast videos and they're dropping the link in there, and then the AI is creating social media videos from it. Yeah. So I tried it last night with a client's YouTube link, and was like, oh,
I know.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't wait till it's good enough to be published without you having to edit it. Because right now you still kind of have to go through it, make sure
you
that
you still have to edit. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But soon enough, I'm going to be able to plug my social medias in, that it logs in automatically. And then I just upload podcasts, and it's automatically posted. Zero time taken from me, and the spread that you can get on that. I know. I love AI for the leverage, and it's amazing.
And even if you have to edit it or spend a little bit of time with it, it's significantly less than creating it from scratch. Significantly less.
Yeah.
So now you have all this content I'm a big fan. I know there are people who are like, oh, it's going to take my job, and they're totally freaked out about it, but it has made us so much more efficient.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast, and I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources, and you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it's going to take people's jobs if they're not using it. I think the future of whatever somebody's saying that it's going to take their job, it's only going to take that job if they don't utilize it moving forward with what they're doing. because I think that's the future of what you're saying. Tying this back to being able to connect with influencers, what's interesting is you can take their content as value to them, run it through Opus AI, and bring them a clip package with 50 clips. Doesn't take you very much time, but you provide a massive amount of value to them because you've been able to repurpose their content in a way that if they were to do it, and maybe not knowing about the AI solution, it would have taken them a hell of a lot longer than you do, especially if you get good at it. One of the ways that I'm doing that is using books. So I'll use AI to create books. We've got an AI publishing company, epub.ai. What we do is, what we do is we interview people, we transcribe those interviews, and the AI turns them into books using the transcription.
Are you serious?
It's freaking badass. Yeah, and it's an interactive book too. At the end of each chapter, there's a prompt to paste into ChatGPT, and you can have a conversation with the chapter. And so that's where the future of it is. It's exciting as all hell, I know. And since we've got the AI to do it now.
I gotta write this down.
Write it down, it's a good thing. And then add this to it, because once you have the prompting to be able to do it, you can have it so that you can input a video, same as repurposing it on Opus, input somebody's interview they did with the president or somebody, you know, an influential interview that they're proud of. Take that, plug it into the AI, turn it into a book, and send them the book in the mail as a printed out copy of the book. It's another one of those PR stunts. And you get that in their hands and they're thinking, who the hell is this person? Nobody's ever done this for me before. It's my book, it's my words inside, it's my interview, and it's in my hands. And you can make a real impact with somebody doing that. What do you think about that?
It's amazing. You know what else that would be good for is account-based marketing. So if you're a B2B organization and you want to focus on the Fortune 600 companies, do the same thing with the create really specific content for them. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And we can use AI to automate all of this. And massive, it's a minimal input and a massive benefit for them. So
that's amazing.
It might take you an hour to do it, but it looks like, and it feels like you put in like, I don't know, 24 hours, because it's a real content piece.
Yeah.
Before AI, it would have been near impossible to do it. And so massive amount of value for a minimal amount of input. That's the way I'm using AI.
Amazing.
To connect with influencers. It's amazing, right? I know, I love it. Yeah. For example, if you didn't reply and you're gonna kick yourself in the ass, I might have taken your content and an interview that you did in the past and sent you a book in the mail. You might have had a gift coming your way. And now here I am punishing you for doing the right thing and getting on the podcast. Look at me go. Oh man, but you see how you can do that, right? It is so.
That's awesome.
It's amazing. Yeah. So what are some of the other ways that you're using AI right now for, the first draft? What about for creative thinking or using it to bounce ideas back and forth? What else are you using it for?
One of the things we did is I just wanted to test it out. And this was probably about a year ago that we started this, but I wanted to test it out for a specific client. And so I built an AI specific for them. And it has their brand personas, their messaging, their values, all of that in it. And now, because we've been doing it for a year and it has built upon itself, I can go into it and I can say that the one of the brand personas name is Jessica Roberts. So I can say, please write an email for Jessica Roberts that does this, this, and this, incentivizes her to take this action and should include this, this, and this. And it does it. And you're like, this is actually really good. it's taken us some time to get it training where we want it, but and it continued, the more we use it, the better it becomes. But for this specific client, they said to us last week, can you write a letter, we're going to do a price increase, could you write the letter? And so we just dropped it into their AI that we built and said, we need to do a price increase. This is what we want to include. And it shot it back in like 3 seconds. And we probably spent 15 or 20 minutes, you know, massaging it and making sure the messaging was correct and send it over. And they were like, this is great.
I know, isn't that the best? We do that too, I know, because I run an agency as well. And I'm thinking like, if only they knew that I didn't put very much time into it, but the output is awesome. And that's what matters at the end of the day. That's why I love
being an entrepreneur. I think the difference is I think hearing this, people will go, well, why do we need an agency? And I think that the difference is that you know what you're doing. I know what I'm doing. But if they just went to ChatGPT and said, we're going to do a price increase, write me a letter, it would not pump out something good.
No kidding,
right? Because they haven't they haven't prompted it correctly. They haven't built it correctly. They haven't fed it correctly. So you have to do all of those things, and you have the experience to be able to do that, where the client doesn't necessarily have that experience.
Right. It's like a tool. Like you can say, oh, you can give somebody a hammer and some nails and say, build a house. And that's the same thing, right? The same thing right. as giving them ChatGPT and saying to write the letter. It's the skill that goes into it. And we're getting so good, and you are too. Like, it's like amazing what you can do with just a little bit of prompt engineering is the new term for it. And
it's pretty amazing. It
is incredible. Yeah. Where do you see the future of it going in terms of PR? How do you see it affecting maybe 5-10 years from now? What do you think is going to happen?
I actually think there was, where did I see it? I just saw it yesterday. I can't remember where I read it. But the prediction is that it will replace 95% of agencies. And to your point earlier, the people or the businesses that it will replace are those that haven't gotten really good at using it and don't understand how to use it. So I sort of liken it to, you're going to eventually have a symphony of AI that does what you need it to do. You have the trumpet section, you have the saxophone section, you have the violin section, you have the flute section, you have the drums. And you're the conductor. You're the one who has to make sure that it's doing everything it needs to, and that it's working cohesively together. So it will replace the drums and the flute and, you know, first chair and second chair and all of that, but it won't replace you, because you are the one who has to make sure that it's working correctly. So when you and I are talking about the ways that we're both using it, that's what the future is how do you get really good at directing it, versus being scared that it's going to replace you.
You want to look at it from an empowering point of view or from a disempowering point of view, as a victim or as the victor of taking something and going all in with it. It's, you know, it reminds me of the typewriter that I pointed out behind you. It's, you know, it's
right.
look at that compared to the computer that you have in front of you. It started Correct. With that. And maybe that's where we're at right now with AI. Who knows what the computer version of that is going to be looking like. I mean, it's exciting, dude. I love it. I'm fascinated by it. It's so cool. I'm not a developer myself. I'm the marketer. So I just sit back and watch what the developers bring me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It can do that? And it's like, okay, so that changes everything, and I got to change the whole vision. And so I love it, because you got to stay very nimble, very on your toes, very ready to take pivots, because if you have a new opportunity that you didn't realize something like that was possible, you got to make a quick pivot. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know.
We don't. Look at what other industries are doing. Like the medical industry is using it. Yeah. Lawyers are using it. Yeah. You know, really highly skilled professional industries are using it. So if they can use it, we certainly can.
No kidding, right? And so I actually modeled something from the medical industry with it. Prognostic.ai is one of the companies that I have. And the prognostic diagnosis, to create a prognosis, is mostly a medical term where somebody will predict what a cancer might do in the future, or what the health situation might be based on current factors. And I took that from the health industry, and I took it to the marketing world. And I said, create something that has the ability to analyze a target audience and come up with predictions of what marketing will work the best with them, what language will work, what positioning will work, what kind of technology they'll respond to the best. And it could come with reports based on a target audience. I'll send it to you after this. I'll run a report on your target audience.
That's super cool.
And it'll get back to you with language patterns, all kinds of sweet things. There are pain points that you wouldn't have thought of. Another cool thing is joint venture opportunities that you wouldn't have thought that would have the same target audience that you do, because there's not an obvious link, but the AI is able to take all of its training and be able to say, hey, look, at the people that are interested in making cupcakes are also interested in let's say cutting or gardening.
Fascinating.
Right. And so it's like, you wouldn't think to make that link by yourself, but the AI is able to analyze. For example, what it can do is look at all the Amazon reviews and analyze somebody's profile who reviewed a program or a product like yours, and be able to say, okay, so this person also reviewed a book about cooking. And then it looks at, okay, so there's 100 reviews like this. It analyzes all their profiles, and then it'll come up with patterns based on what their similarities are. And then you can go to the influencers within those categories, partner with them, and bring that data to them as a way to get into the door too, because you've got proof.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's so cool, man. I love it. What do you think the best question for me to ask is in terms of what's something that if I were to ask it would be able to provide the most amount of value to an entrepreneurial audience about PR, let's say?
I think you already asked it in terms of how you get started and how you can promote yourself. That was a really good question. Also asked the AI question, which was good. You know what? Maybe it's something along the lines of how you can use communications to scale your business. So if you're $500,000 in revenue now, how do you hit the $1 million mark? And then how do you go from there to five and five to 10 and so on?
Right, using communication. So how do you do that at each level, let's say, just generally speaking? I know it depends because I know that's what your answer is going to be. Oh, it depends, which is it's true. It always depends. But generally speaking, right? So how do we leverage communications to really scale our business, regardless of where it's at?
So communications is all about reputation and credibility and authority and trust, right? So if you can build that and continue to build on top of it, that's how you're going to scale your business. And I think one of the most challenging things, sort of, I always joke that it's the bane of my existence is that it's really hard to measure. You know if you have really good PR and you know if you have really bad PR, but you don't know how it's correlating to the sales. And because of that, it's usually the first thing to go when the economy is bad or sales are down, right? So, but then you discover 6 months or 12 months down the line, oh crap, we haven't done any PR, and so nobody knows who we are anymore. They think we've gone out of business, but it happens all the time, right? So our pipeline is dry, and so, like I said, you know if it's working and you know if it's not, but it's really challenging to correlate. So I would say, even in downtimes, a lot of it you can do yourself. A lot of it you can do exactly what we talked about here. You know, it's about relationships. It's about finding the right people. It's about figuring out where your audience hangs out. It takes time, of course. And somebody who has expertise in it is it's going to take them less time. But you can do it as an entrepreneur. You can do it yourself. And as you scale that's what you want to build on is your credibility and your reputation. Warren Buffett has a famous quote saying, "If you lose money for the firm, I'll be forgiving, but if you lose reputation, I'll be ruthless." And that's really what this is about, is how do you just continue to plod along as you're building your business, building your reputation at the same time, because that's what's going to help you go from, you know, 0 to 100 really fast.
There's really something to say about that. The question is, how do you know what content to have them promote once it comes down to finding the person, connecting with them, having that relationship built? How do you know what to give them so that you're going to be able to get as much traction and take advantage of the situation as much as you can? How do you know that?
I would say there's two ways. Number one is your content has to be interesting. It can't be the same as everybody else. So that's why I say AI is a great first draft, because you and I can put in the same prompt and get the same content. And then if we publish the first draft, it wouldn't be interesting, right? So what makes it interesting is when you add the storytelling, when you add your experience, maybe you add a case study, you say, well, when we did this for a client, or when a customer used our product, they had this result. When you add that kind of stuff in, it makes it different and unique and interesting. So that's number one. Number two, one of the things that I find the most valuable, just as a consumer, but as a consumer who has a marketing mind, is the influencers who use the product and develop content on their own based on their use of the product is the most effective. So you have to be willing to let them do that. And you have to be willing for them to say, you know, this part actually sucks, but the company's working on it. I've talked to the company and they're working on it. And, you know, what watch out for this, or this is how you use it. There's a brand new software in the PR industry called Coverage Impact that the company is actually offering for free right now because they're beta testing it. But you can take all of your, this is really inside baseball, but you can take all of your media hits, put them into a spreadsheet, and then upload it into this software. And then you can overlay your Google Analytics or stock prices or sales or whatever it happens to be, and see if there's any correlation between, oh, a big story ran in TechCrunch in August, and we had a huge spike in sales in August, or our stock price went up in August. So you can see the correlation. And so, you know, for me, I'm testing it out, of course, but I'm saying to them, you know, what would be really cool is if we could correlate more than just our media hits. Can we look at influencers? Can we look at our content? And so I'm actually almost helping them develop pieces of it that will encompass the entire peso model versus just the earned media piece of it. So doing stuff like that, like being really willing to work with your influencers to figure out what the industry needs that you may not be thinking about.
Right. You know, that's so cool, because one other thing you can track with that is the sales, and you can correlate the actual sales with the partnerships and figure out this partnership worked really well. This one didn't work so well. And so you can, you know, use that data, and it's so easy to analyze data too. You can upload the CSV files to the Excel files to ChatGPT, for example. I did that today. I took quiz results from a campaign that we ran, sent it to ChatGPT, told it to give me specific, I ran a prognostic report on it actually, and it told me all of the pain points that are likely to be, because this is the thing, it doesn't just give you the data, it also is able to analyze the data and give you actionable steps based on it. And when it comes down to somebody writing the negatives about your product or service, if it comes down to that, if they've used your product or whatever it is and they found some negatives with it, the fact that there are negatives in the report too makes the whole thing more credible. And so fascinating. It's been used in advertising for a long time, like the old Volkswagen advertising, for example, that's think small, they would put. And so they took the negative reviews, all the cars are too small, they're junky looking, they're, you know, they're going to fall apart. And they leaned into that. They didn't avoid it. They leaned into
it. Great,
big great text, example. Big magazine ad, little tiny car. Think small is the they leaned into it. And so you can do the same thing with the negatives, the perceived negatives in your advertising. And because you mentioned them, you can also add the word but afterwards. Yes, it's small, but it's cheaper, whatever, cheaper, better, safer, whatever it might be.
And you get a flower in your dashboard.
There you go. And it comes with the flower. Do they still do that?
They do. Yeah.
They still do it. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh man. My ex-girlfriend had an old Beetle, and it had the pot for it, but it didn't have the flower anymore. I said,
oh, it didn't? That's funny.
No, but I thought it was somebody took the damn flower out of it. Yeah. Before they sold it. I'm keeping it, but that goes towards the whole, cause they're part of the Beetle identity so much so that they wanted to take the damn flower with them when they sold the car. And little things like that can really help solidify the way that people use it. And
that's a great example.
Relate with it. Yeah. No kidding. Eh? I love it. What's another question that, or how about this? What do you have to add in terms of helping somebody that's running a business, tactically speaking, be able to immediately improve profits, maybe within the month, using a PR stunt, using some sort of communications technique that you've noticed works really well? What's something that we can all do to immediately see profit?
This is not technically communications. It's more marketing, I would say, but email marketing continues to prove number one, no matter what your product or service is or what industry you're in, it works the best. And like I said, it's not, you know, the communication piece comes into how you message it, but if you can do something short and succinct and give a really good call to action, figure out the pain point and speak to that, that's where you're going to have huge success from that every single time.
Then the question becomes, how do you build the list up? So for you, for example, I mean, over a long period of time and a lot of value provided, that's how you did it. What are some lessons you've learned in terms of building up that audience so that we can not make the same mistakes moving forward if we were to do the same thing?
So I would say a couple of things, and I'm going to be yelled at for encouraging this, but Zoom Info or another software like that, where you can download lists and personalize your emails, it works effective. It's really effective. So you don't necessarily have to build a list to start. But if you are building a list and you're growing it organically, which is a lot harder, which is how I've done it, you have to stay top of mind pretty consistently. So you have to continue to create compelling content. It has to be, you have to deliver it at the same time every time. So if you say, I'm going to deliver content once a month or once a week or whatever it happens to be, it has to be the same time every time so that people expect it. And it's really it really is about consistency and making it interesting.
Again, the question becomes, how do you know what content to send them? Do you tap into the existing news articles that are taking place, big influential actions or things that happen in the world that you take advantage of, you write about? It's kind of in the journalism realm at this point. You're leveraging stories that are taking place. How do you know what content to post to keep it interesting, to keep them expecting it, as you talk about?
I would definitely pay attention to world trends, and I would definitely pay attention to industry trends and things that are happening. You know, one of the big things that's happening in this moment that you and I are talking is Kate Middleton is being eviscerated in the media because she photoshopped a photo. Like, who cares? Seriously. But they're calling it a PR crisis. And so when somebody calls something like that a PR crisis, I'm like, that's not a PR crisis. It might be a crisis, but it has nothing to do with PR. Like, it PR didn't create it. PR can't save it. Yeah. It's not. So from my perspective, I can, because I have that expertise, I can write about that's happening in the world right now with the PR lens, with the PR slant to it. So pay attention to what's going on in the world. And if you have an interesting take on something, always look at it from the perspective of, is this something interesting is my take interesting? And is anybody else talking about it? Because you want to be different and you want to be unique, and you don't want to be like straddling the fence of, oh, this, like, go out, get on your soapbox, be different. Be like, my brother just posted on Facebook yesterday. He's an old school car salesman. Like, that has been his entire career. And one of the things that he's discovered throughout his career is it's rife with addiction, drug and alcohol addiction. And he's been really exploring this whole avenue of it and why that is. It's long hours. It's highly competitive, like all of these things, right? You only get paid based on your last sale, like all of this stuff. And so it's rife with really high addiction levels. And so he posted yesterday, he's been doing all this research, but yesterday was sort of his coming out party where he said, the car industry sucks. It was much more articulate than this. And the reason being is because there's so much addiction. And he's like, let's have this conversation. And it's blowing up for him because he's saying something that's different. And it's interesting. It's scary, but it's interesting. And he's saying something that's different than anybody else talks about. So think about that. Like, what do you have that's different? What kind of take do you have on it? Is the Kate Middleton thing a PR crisis? No, absolutely not. Is it even a crisis? No, it's not. So I can do it from that perspective, right? So think about it, like, what's happening in the world and how your take on it is a little bit different than everybody else's.
It's hard. It's freaking hard. But if you can do it, then you have an opportunity to go viral and really pull in a lot of traffic really fast. And then you've got to deal with the massive success, the overnight success that people talk about. Yeah. But what about crises? Because we'll all face some negative PR or some negative publicity in our life at some point. How do you handle, like, let's say the Kate Middleton example, because we're already on it. How would you, if you were handling her publicity, how would you take care of that situation? How would you position it? The way I think about positioning it is as she cares about you. I like to flip negatives into positives, see what the other side feels and looks like. So if that was it, photoshopping a picture, was it to make her look different, is thinner? What was the goal of it?
Nobody really knows. The conspiracy theory is that she had this abdominal surgery in January, and the theory is that she just hasn't felt well enough yet to take a photo, which is fine. Like, we've all been there.
Okay.
Advising her, I would have her go out in public pretty quickly and just show everybody that, because people were like, well, maybe she's dead, and maybe, like, come on. So I would have her get out in public pretty fast, even if she's not, you know, feeling her best yet, but just, you know, that's one of the things I would have her do pretty quickly. She did apologize and just said, you know, I'm an amateur photographer and I use Photoshop. Like, who hasn't done that, right? But I think, you know, we were talking about reputation and credibility and how, as you're growing your business, to maintain that and build upon it, because people are really forgiving in a crisis if you've built really high reputation and trust. you know, that you're going to have a 24-hour news cycle of people being mean to you and saying negative things about you. But if you've built really high trust and you handle it well, you apologize and you do the right things, it's not going to be an issue. But it's when you sort of hide and you don't apologize or you blame somebody else that becomes
like we're with Trump with the last election, for example, blaming. I mean, like, I don't care what the truth is or not. I'm not political. I don't like how he handled the blaming others because it put him in a victim role, which is against the branding of how he positions himself. So it was incongruent. When it comes to the Kate Middleton thing, is I would position it as look how much she you can take the authenticity route where it's you. She cares so much about what you think that she felt the need to do this. Maybe that's not the right way to do it, but you can take the negative and turn it into a positive. So if she photoshopped it, maybe it's that she's human, like we all have, and you have the opportunity to make it so that it's actually a bonding experience. The negative turns into a positive. And without that, then you wouldn't have had the opportunity to connect with your audience the same way that you do because of it. And the whole no publicity is bad publicity thing is, I don't know if it's a little bit black and white there, but it depends on how you react to it. And if you can create some authenticity with it, it's another chance to connect and really show your human side. And I feel like people appreciate that. I love it. I think we've covered some interesting topics today. Anything
we've gone like the whole gamut.
I know, seriously. It's like the 4 years of university in 40 minutes here. So what else do you have to add before we kick this off? Anything that you want to throw in?
Man, I think we covered a lot. I'm going to check out your EPUB for sure. I wrote down some notes.
Cool. Right on. I'd be actually, you know what I'll do is I'll take this and I'll turn it into a book for you just so we can, we sell the books for $5,000, but it really doesn't cost us that much because we've got the AI that
that's
now
awesome.
That we've
good
invented
for you.
It and invested in it. So it doesn't take us that long. So yeah, I'll do that for you and we'll see what happens. So I had fun. I think we covered way more than I expected. Pretty rapid fire.
Yeah, we covered a ton.
Yeah. And I had fun. So thank you for being here. I appreciate it. And
oh my gosh, it's my pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Let me take the credit. It's my pleasure. What are your social media handles? How do we find you?
Spinsucks.com is the best place to go and everything's there.
Perfect.
Everything's Spinsucks. It's easy.
Perfect. How do you spell it?
SPINSUCKS.
Right on. Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here and we will keep in touch. And I'd like to have another episode with you in the future because there's more to be fleshed out here, more in depth in terms of the surface level, because we covered a lot and I'd like to go deeper on some things. So maybe we'll have you back. So
that'd be great. I would love to.
Awesome. Okay. So I'll talk with you soon. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.